This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. If you get food poisoning or your kid gets the flu, can you take time off work to care for yourself or your child and still get paid? Vermont labor statistics from a couple of years ago showed that 20% of Vermont workers don't have any paid sick time at their jobs. And the Federal Bureau of Labor says that occupations that require workers to have high levels of contact with the public are less likely to offer paid sick leave. Some Vermonters want to change that. Last year, a bill passed the House that would require Vermont employers to offer most full-time employees paid time off for personal or family care. And now the Senate is looking into the issue. This morning, the Senate Committee on Economic Development, Housing, and General Affairs was taking a look at the bill before sending it to the full Senate. And our two guests today have been watching the negotiations carefully. Bill Driscoll is Vice President of Associated Industries of Vermont, which opposes the measure. Annie Acciletta is with the Paid Sick Days Coalition that has been advocating for this bill. Welcome to both of you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
So this bill is H-187, and the title is An Act Relating to Absence from Work for Health Care and Safety. It gives workers time off for health care-related issues for themselves or for immediate family members. It also gives workers time off to deal with issues related to violence, sexual assault, and stalking. That part of the bill doesn't seem to be getting a lot of debate. It seems not to have as much contention as or questions and negotiations as the part about who can stay home when they're sick and how would that work and which employees does this relate to and how much time off and all of that. So we're going to spend more time on that today. Let's first of all figure out what happened this morning since you were both there. Annie, what did the Senate committee talk about and or decide?
So the Senate committee was actually expected to take a vote today. They decided to delay until tomorrow. I guess they wanted some more analysis on state temporary workers. So that's basically what happened this morning. I don't know, Bill, if you...
Yeah, I would say it's largely fine-tuning. The committee, I wouldn't say, has been making any dramatic changes from what passed the House. And so it was mostly proofreading and double-checking on some of the adjustments. There is a question about how many state employees may or may not be covered and whether that's right or wrong or what that would mean for the cost of the bill. And then also there is some question about certain categories of employees who have a lot of control over their own schedule and should they be covered or not covered if they're basically dictating their own schedule already. There was some back and forth on that that issue as well.
Are those sticking points, or do you think tomorrow it is likely to be voted out of committee?
I would say it's definitely going to be voted out. How those questions are going to be fully resolved, there might be a little bit of change between now and then, but I think it's largely settled.
All right. So if it's largely settled, Bill Driscoll says, and we know that the governor has said he supports the legislation, we know that President Obama has been encouraging states to pass legislation like this, saying it's a priority, and it's likely to go to the full Senate with the House already having approved it and the committee voting it out. Annie Acciletta, do you think that this is a foregone conclusion that this bill is going to pass this year?
Yes, I think so. We are very confident that the bill will go out of committee and go to the Senate for a vigorous debate. And we do believe that House leadership and Senate leadership will work with the administration to get a bill to the governor's desk.
Bill, do you agree?
I think it's certainly likely. There is still going to be obviously a lot of discussion about ways to perhaps improve the bill. There have been some, you know, other states where once the potential costs or the pros and cons of the trade-offs you're going to have if something like that happens is better understood, there can be a big swing in public opinion about whether they really want it or not. I don't, you know, whether that's going to happen in this case, we'll have to see. And a lot of these laws that are, and I shouldn't say a lot, since very few states have actually enacted this sort of legislation, it's still very, very new in the states, most of the states that have done it. And so I think there's still a question of whether there might be some buyer's remorse or some revisions to these laws going forward. So even if this legislation does pass and get enacted into law, I don't think it's necessarily the end of the story.
Yeah, a few states have passed legislation relating to paid sick time, and several municipalities around the country have also paid just within their boundaries.
Correct.
Similar legislation. We are talking about the paid sick leave bill today and whether the legislature should mandate that employers offer it to most employees anyway. Listeners, tell us what it's like at your workplace. Do you have paid sick days or not? Does it make a difference to how you take care of yourself or your family when someone's sick? And business owners, what does this look like from your perspective? Can you afford afford to give your employees paid sick days? Do you already? Is this something that you've considered and made a decision on? What impact would it have on your business if this bill becomes law? Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or you can post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Let's get to your positions and why you are strongly or somewhat strongly advocating on one side or the other of this. Annie Acciatella, you are part of the Paid Sick Days Coalition that's been lobbying in support of this bill. Why do you think it's important when, as we know, the majority of Vermont employers already do offer some sort of paid leave for their employees?
Right. So by way of background, I just wanted to talk a little bit about who is in the coalition, who is in the Paid Sick Leave Coalition. So right now I work for Voices for Vermont's Children, and we are very committed to seeing paid sick days pass. And we're leading the coalition that is made up of groups focusing on education, low-income advocacy, health, groups working on behalf of women, children, labor, elders, and domestic violence prevention. In addition to these advocacy groups, we also have a coalition of over 250 businesses that are supporting this legislation. And the issue that we're really trying to address here is that 60,000 Vermonters, 20% of the workforce here in Vermont, do not have access to any paid time off. And so as a coalition, we think that paid sick leave will help in three ways. First, we think that it will strengthen families. No parent should have to choose between their family's economic stability and staying home with a sick child. Too many families are having to make that impossible choice right now. And the second argument, I guess, that we would make is that this really goes to protecting public health and safety. Over half of the norovirus outbreaks are attributed to a sick food worker. Nobody wants their server coughing on their food or drink. And so I think that this is really important for public health. In addition, this bill also protects domestic violence survivors. You know, there's an astounding statistic that 1 in 4 women are victims of domestic violence. And what this would do would allow survivors to receive counseling and services and often go to court, which is usually during business hours. And so we think that's a big part of the bill that we really want to emphasize.
Bill Driscoll, those are hard things to argue against. So why does your association, the Associated Industries of Vermont, oppose the bill?
Sure. Well, it basically comes down to questions of balance, affordability, and flexibility. Obviously, the appeal of paid sick leave is pretty self-evident. The question comes down to it also comes with a price tag. Many companies can afford to do that. Many companies provide it, but not everybody necessarily can. And whether it's a question of whether it's in the budget or if they have a certain structure where they simply can't afford to have fairly flexible leave policies just from a staffing perspective, you're going to run into those sort of companies where that's a challenge. Now, unfortunately, a lot of the consequences of that may largely fall on employees, because if a company is required to provide this sort of paid leave and that presents a cost, then that may come from lower wages to offset that. The company may have to reduce other benefits. If they're in a position, they may have to increase prices. But it's going to come from somewhere. So the question is, where do you draw the line? Now, this legislation currently doesn't draw a line, essentially. Everybody is required to provide it regardless of circumstance.
There are some exemptions, and part-time workers, yeah. Seasonal workers exempt from this,
right.
Et cetera. But you mean
right. I'm trying to, in broad strokes, the concern is that there's not enough of balance. Other states that have done this have exempted very small employers. You have current law, which provides guaranteed leave for folks with job security.
Unpaid.
Which is balanced by being either both unpaid, and then there's also an exemption for very small employers in Vermont law. That's pretty common around the country. So there's an acknowledgement that, yes, on the one hand, there's a value to having paid time off. On the other hand, there's a cost. And so how do you strike that balance? And we believe that the current approach of having guaranteed leave balanced by not having it required to be paid for by the employer is a better balance to maintain in terms of providing a benefit where you can, but not being so rigid that you're going to end up with some negative feedback consequences.
We're going to go deeper into this, but let's first go to Alex, who's calling in from Burlington. Alex, your perspective.
Hi. I have a concern about it in that many places where I have worked in the past, my hours were limited to just up to what the full-time hours were because they didn't want to give any of the benefits that they were required to give to full-time employees. Even though I was willing to opt out of those benefits just to get more hours because I needed more income that way. And I'm worried that this will be a further incentive for employers to limit the hours of their employees who they would otherwise give more hours. And would that be addressed at all?
Alex, thanks for your call. And sure, let's address this right now. Also, we could add in there workers who are categorized differently so that they're not categorized as full-time employees of a company, but categorized more as some contractors or something where those kinds of benefits don't apply. So, Annie Achitella, what about that unintended consequence that employers could reduce the number of hours that employees work so they don't have to give that benefit?
I don't actually think that will happen. One of the things that we've seen is that, Vermont business owners who provide paid sick days to their employees, they report a more stable, reliable, and long-term workforce. All of our businesses have said that they are, this is a good benefit that they offer their employees, and they would really want to continue offering that benefit. I don't think that they will have huge schedule shifts.
But I assume most of the businesses that have signed on to your coalition are businesses that already offer this benefit. They believe in it, and so they probably already offer it. Alex is saying he worked for a company that cut his hours so they already didn't have to pay other benefits. If paid sick time is also included, why wouldn't companies be doing the same thing that Alex says his employer was already doing?
Well, I think right now, the bill applies to all employees, full-time and part-time right now, as it came out of the House. So I think, that was really important for our coalition to see. As many people have multiple part-time jobs, this benefit needs to be provided to all employees. So I think, to answer Alex's point, this benefit would apply to him.
Bill, why shouldn't this just be the cost of doing business? You want healthy employees, as we've heard, employers that have employees in service industries, healthcare, restaurant industries, hospitality. These are the ones least likely to offer paid sick time. So it's affecting all of us to have sick workers on the job. Why shouldn't this just be something that is the cost of opening a business?
Well, I guess the rub is it will be the cost of opening a business and the cost of doing business. And the issue is that the cost of doing business has consequences. Obviously, there are tipping points, and it'll be different from business to business as to whether or not, and they're speaking about the cost of business in general, whether or not they can afford to be here in Vermont, whether or not they can afford to pay as much as they would like to for their employees, whether or not they'd be able to reinvest in their business. As you add to the cost of doing business, that reduces all those other benefits. And so that, again, comes back to the question of balance. If you look at Vermont, our wages are in the low 80s compared to the national average. We have a very high cost of living. There are a lot of challenges, and one of the factors that feeds into those facts is the cost of doing business. The more expensive you make it for businesses to operate, the more you see feedback elsewhere. So again, it's a question of where do you strike the right balance.
We got a note from Ray who says, is there some solid evidence that the benefits to providing paid sick leave at least break even for companies when things like limiting the spread of illness among other workers and such is considered? If it can be shown to be a longer-term net economic benefit, surely some who may oppose it will be swayed. Bill, do you have a response to that?
Well, I think it's a fair point that again, there are benefits to providing that. And the question is, can you afford to do it in that context? One of the things that we suggested early on in some of the discussions about this issue is for those businesses that might be able to benefit from something like this and might be able to afford it, is there an education gap that you can try to address through greater outreach to make sure that if an employer makes a decision, is it a fully informed decision? And that is a fair a fair question and would be a reasonable thing to do from our perspective, rather than simply making the assumption that every business shall do it.
We're talking today about the pros and cons of legislating paid sick time for employees. It's something that's being debated at the State House this week, and we'd love to hear your thoughts. Are you in favor, opposed? Can you share a personal anecdote with us that you think illuminates some of the arguments that we're hearing on this? Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Coming up, we're going to hear a little bit more about some of the details in the bill. We'll also go to RJ, who's calling in from Middlebury. You're listening to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Annie Acitella is with the Paid Sick Days Coalition, and Bill Driscoll of Associated Industries of Vermont opposes the measure that we're talking about today, which is paid sick days and should it be legislated by the Vermont government. They were both at the State House this morning as the Senate Committee on Economic Development, Housing, and General Affairs looked at this issue. It's going to get a full debate in the full Senate, according to both of our guests, who believe this will be voted out likely tomorrow. What do you think of the idea of requiring employers to offer paid sick time to workers? Do you offer sick time to your employees? Do you have paid sick time off at your job? Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or you can comment on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. And RJ's been waiting on the line from Middlebury. Hi, RJ. Go right ahead.
Hey there. Jane?
Hi.
My name's RJ. And I'm actually just coming home from a doctor's appointment, and it's in the middle of my workday, and I have a really flexible work schedule, which I really enjoy. And I'm wondering what's the research that's been done on the cost of turnover in Vermont for people that work at different businesses? Because I know the cost of turnover can be really difficult for an employer to find new people. And I feel like with a more flexible work schedule, there's going to be less turnover and therefore more productivity. So, again, kind of looking at how this legislation is going to better affect the economy down the road.
RJ, thanks for the call. Annie Acitella, is that something that your coalition has looked into as a way to advocate for this bill?
Yes, absolutely. A lot of our businesses that are part of the coalition have reported that turnover, who do offer paid sick leave, turnover has decreased. And a lot of their personnel budget goes into training new employees when employees part. So they've reported that this has, produced more long-term employees, and overall, it's produced a gain for them.
Are these employers who are blue-collar employees? I mean, what level are we talking about here where workers feel like they have the flexibility to decide whether to stay or go based on the benefits? Or are you hearing from employers who don't offer this that workers get sick and they have to leave? I mean, what are we talking about here when we're looking at that turnover?
Well, I think the person that actually testified last week, she runs a small retail business and a bakery. So they have seen, huge benefits to their business in terms of keeping longer-term employees.
Let's go to Kendra calling in from Norwich. Hi, Kendra. Your thoughts.
Hi. I was wondering if small businesses have been approached with the issue of transparency when it comes to whether or not they offer employees benefit, and I've worked in retail and restaurant services, and I've always felt like there's been a disconnect between what their employees are given benefits and whether the company is actually making enough money to provide those benefits.
So, Kendra, you would like to have more transparency for the employees to know, or do you mean for the legislature to know? Who should they be being transparent to?
I believe to both, but I think it's important for employees to see whether they're working for a company that seems to be shorting them these benefits for maybe just for the business owners, or also so that maybe businesses could advocate on their own side saying they truly cannot afford these things. So I guess it's for both parties.
Kendra, thanks for the call. Bill Driscoll, do you want to address that?
I'm not entirely sure what the question was in terms of transparency. If she's talking about different benefits for different employees,
Well, I think, you know, I don't want to put words really in Kendra's mouth, but one of the things that I hear in her question is an employer can say, oh, you know, I really can't afford to give you these benefits, or might be saying that to you in as you advocate for not requiring this law, when really it's not that they can't afford it. It's that they choose not to. They would like higher profits, or this just isn't something they'd like to offer. So it sounds like Kendra wants more transparency. If a company is saying, I can't afford to offer my employees this benefit, can they prove that?
Well, I guess not to be too flip, but I mean, I've been representing business interests for a number of years here, and it's not an easy job, and it's not necessarily very popular to oppose a lot of these issues that have a natural appeal, and so I don't think a lot of businesses are saying, you know, this is a bad idea for us, and not actually meaning it. I don't think that would be worth it for most folks.
Let's go to Sue, who's calling in from Queechee. Hi, Sue. Go right ahead.
Hi, I am a small business owner, and I'm really unhappy about the notion that we as a state would not support what I see as an issue of dignity for people who are working for other people. You know, I always have given sick time. It comes out of my pocket because it's just me and usually one or two people working for me, but it's really important that I show that respect to them, that we figure out how to make sure that they can take care of themselves and their family. And also, I don't want people in the office who are sick. So I'm hoping we're going to pass this just because this is who we are in this state.
So let me ask you a question. So this is something that you feel strongly about, and in your business, it's something that you have made a priority, even though, as you said, it does come out of your pocket. Why do you think it's something that the legislature should mandate for all employers rather than be something that employers decide based on their business plan and also, you know, their morals and ethics?
Because I think public policy should support this. This affects people on so many levels. Losing your job because you got sick or your kid got sick is not something that we should support as a state.
Sue, appreciate that perspective. Thanks for calling in. Annie's nodding that she wants to jump on this.
Sure. Yeah. So in this state, I really do feel that working families are struggling. There are, you know, many families trying to work multiple jobs to make ends meet. And so, you know, this really does come down to a question of who we are as a state. And I think that you've seen, you know, the House and now the Senate Economic Development Committee really recognize and stand up for working Vermonters on this.
Sue did mention she worried that people would lose their jobs if they were sick. And we should point out that it is not legal to fire somebody for missing a day because they're sick. Right, Bill? It's just that your employers are not required to currently pay for paid sick time.
Right. Well, current law provides that guarantee for employees of companies 15 or larger, or more than 15, and I think it's 10 for parental leave. So that's the current cutoff. And one of the options we offered up as a potential compromise was to look at the question of whether or not maybe adjusting those thresholds might be a way to address some of the level of concern. But I guess I would also
adjusting them downward, so
correct.
Even smaller employers would be required to do that.
Certainly, looking at the, I think it'd be a fair question to look at. But I also, I guess I'd stress, and we're somewhat of a broken record, but it really does come down to that same issue. If you're talking about, you know, being concerned about working Vermonters and their families, we come from the very same place. And our question is it worth some folks being paid less or losing other benefits in order to guarantee this particular benefit?
Can you point out one company? I mean, you may not be willing to name one by name, but can you point out a company that has said to you, we will either have to let go of employees or pay them less if this bill passes?
I believe some of the companies that have testified have said that. I can't bring a name to mind, and I don't know if it would be appropriate for me to speak on behalf of one of those companies. But we did survey about 700 employers across the state in terms of what they thought the likely reaction would be in order to accommodate this. And about two-thirds we're looking at probably either reducing wages or reducing benefits, just because, you know, it's not like they have a closet back, you know, stuff with money that they can somehow use to pay for this benefit. It has to come from somewhere else. Certainly raising prices is an option for some too, but that really depends on the nature of the business. You know, most of our members are manufacturers, and you know, our prices are set nationally and globally. We can't go to price hikes in order to adjust to costs of doing business.
Again, today we're talking about the paid sick leave bill that's moving through the legislature and getting some opinions on that, including opinions from our listeners. If you'd like to share your thoughts or your perspective or your own business situation, you can call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211, or post a note on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. I want to get to a few more calls, but Annie, just so that we're all on the same page as we have this discussion, we should know how many paid sick days we're actually talking about. My understanding of the bill is the first 3 years, it would be 3 paid sick days per year for full-time employees who've already worked a year or 1,400 hours, and then that would go up to 5 sick days per year after 3 years of the bill. Is that correct still?
Yes, that's correct. So it's for 3 days for the first 2 years.
Okay. And this is for an employee. You would be allowed, Bill, to, as an employer, to require an employee to wait until they had actually worked either a full year or 1,400 hours before they were eligible for this benefit?
Right. Well, it's still a work in progress, but the current draft is simplifying that to basically a year. And I think it is important to clarify, because some people do get confused. It's not the 3 to 5 change is not on a, it's not per employee. It's a set time. So at a certain point in time, it will be 5 days.
Right. It's not based on how long you've worked for a company. It's just based on how long the bill has been.
Correct.
The law will have been in effect.
Right.
Okay. All right. Let's go to John in Chester. Hi, John. Go right ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
My comment is that this is one of those things that it's the legislature being benevolent with other people's money. I mean, I think an employer that wants to do this, that's fine, and that might be an attraction to hire people. But to mandate it is just saying, okay, we think this is a great idea and it's a great benefit, and you have to do it. I think there should be a distinction there. I think too often the legislature is doing that. They're spending other people's money.
So, John, let me ask you, from your perspective, that this shouldn't be legislated. Paid sick time for you think that should just be a benefit that an employee decides whether they want to go with a company that does or doesn't offer that?
Well, I think it should be up to the employer. I mean, if they have a good relationship with their employees and they want to maintain their employees, if they think that's going to help them do that, then they should be able to offer that. But I don't think it should be mandated.
John, thanks for your perspective. Appreciate that. And let's hear from Michelle in Middlebury. Hi, Michelle. Your thoughts.
Hi. My comment was just I would be willing to pay a little bit more for whatever the product might be if I knew that that people were having the ability to take time to, as mentioned, go take their children to the doctor, take themselves to the doctor. I think it's really important for people to be able to do that, and I would be willing to pay a little bit more and be able to make that happen.
Michelle, appreciate hearing from you as well. Bill Driscoll, you mentioned at the start of the show that you think that this will be passed through to the full Senate, and it is likely to be passed by the Senate and passed into law, given the support that the governor has made for it and the makeup of our legislators. So is there anything specific that you're looking for as this is still in committee that you think would make it more palatable to your members?
Well, starting from the point of view, obviously, we prefer not to have the bill. There were a number of adjustments that we recommended and we'll continue to try to recommend as it goes through the process in terms of mirroring other Vermont laws and other state practices in terms of recognizing that a small business exemption would make sense, you know, a certain size, whether it's the current sort of 15 standard that's in state family leave or not. And also there's a question of, you know, limiting the number of days that can accrue. California is an example that doesn't have a size limit for companies, but they only require 3 days instead of 5. And there are a number of other issues. One question that I hope gets revisited is, and this gets back to the fact that sometimes employers and employees, there's a trade-off and there might be a benefit or something that they prefer to paid sick leave. And sometimes that's reflected in collective bargaining agreements. And it's our position that, you know, if through negotiations, labor and management mutually agree that they would rather have something other than paid sick leave as a balance, and that should be respected by the state. They shouldn't impose that mandate despite what negotiations might produce. So
like that. What do you mean? What specifically would you think that would be sort of an equal to or, you know, should be exempt kind of benefit?
I mean, in terms of what would be a trade-off for paid leave?
Yeah, that you think would should be exempt and should be acceptable.
Well, basically, no. Well, the point was that if there's a mutual agreement to not have, say, five paid sick leave days, that should be allowed if that's agreed to by the parties. You may have a situation where...
Oh, you mean an employee and an employer, like Alex, who called earlier, who said, I'd be happy to not have any benefits for more hours?
It would be in the context of a negotiated union, a collective bargaining agreement.
Got it. Okay.
So where you actually have two identifiable parties, there's a formal mechanism between the employers and the employees to negotiate what they want ideal situation to be. Now, in an ideal world, you could have a similar situation in a non-union workplace, but that would be harder to you wouldn't have the same sort of formal process to use for that particular exemption.
Let me squeeze one more call in here, and then Annie will go to you. Andrea is calling in from Plainfield. Hi, Andrea. Your thoughts?
Hi.
Hi. Go right ahead.
I'm a small employer. I have about 11 or 12 employees, and we currently offer health insurance to the employees in our manufacturing section, which I pay for, and we have three paid sick days. I'm just wondering why the insurance companies can't step in a little bit and help cover the sick days. My insurance, I used to pay $120 a month for a family for catastrophic insurance. Now I'm up to $900 a month for catastrophic insurance with the $5,000 deductible per person. And it just really grates on the backs of small employers.
Andrea, I hear your concerns, and let's put them to Annie here as we wrap up this part of the conversation. Annie, is there any way that rather than put this on the backs of small employers, there could be a compromise like asking insurance to pick this up?
I think that right now, I think, you know, the bill is underway. I do want to go back to the point about a small business carve out. We absolutely oppose a small business carve out because we believe that, you know, you could have a family where the mom gets paid sick leave and the dad doesn't. You know, the mom is going to stay home with the sick child consistently. And so what this does is really create unfairness. And what we want to do is create a minimum standard of paid time off for all employees. And our employers think that this is fair.
That's Annie Acitella. She's with the Paid Sick Days Coalition. We've also been talking with Bill Driscoll, Vice President of Associated Industries of Vermont, which opposes the bill. Annie and Bill, thank you very much for talking with us today.
Thanks for the opportunity.
We've been talking this hour about balancing the welfare of workers with the bottom line of businesses. Coming up, we'll put a finer point on that topic. The Reverend Debbie Ingram joins us to describe what she means when she advocates for a moral economy. This is Vermont Edition. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Governor Peter Shumlin presented his final budget address last Thursday. Vermont Interfaith Action, a faith-based coalition of congregations, was listening carefully. The group advocates for what it calls a moral economy, and the state's budgeting process is a big part of that. Here to help us understand what a moral economy is the Reverend Debbie Ingram, Executive Director of Vermont Interfaith Action. It's very nice to have you with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
So maybe you could just explain for people who are unfamiliar with the term what a moral economy is and represents.
This is a term that our clergy caucus came up with. They were meeting together about a year and a half ago and were really lamenting the fact that so many people come to their doors asking for financial assistance in various ways, and they have very limited resources. And they were also very concerned with seemingly middle-class people in their congregations who were having trouble making ends meet or were perhaps using two or three jobs to help their families. So they got together and discussed what their faith traditions, their respective faith traditions, say about what an economy should do and what opportunities should be available. So basically the elements that we highlight are the dignity of all work and a society working together to create work opportunities for all who are able. A society also respecting those who are not able to work for whatever reason and taking care of the vulnerable. And then finally, all of us taking responsibility for the environment in which we all live and work.
So when I said you were listening carefully to the governor's budget address, what were you listening for?
We were especially listening for whether the budget would be balanced as it has for many years, almost solely by making cuts and not by increasing any revenue, which we oppose that principle. We had also done a series of speaking engagements across the state with our partner, Public Assets Institute, and we had asked the administration to comply with 2012 session law and to produce publicly a current services budget, which reveals the true costs of all the programs that the state has committed to.
And did you hear what you wanted to hear?
Well, yes and no. We were very pleased that the budget is balanced by a combination of increases in revenue and cuts. We are pleased that a current services budget was produced. It is not exactly in the format or to the level of detail that we would hope for, and we do want to meet with Secretary of Administration Justin Johnson, who has been very receptive, and work with him to make improvements in that in the future. But we are grateful that he made this first attempt.
Is the idea of a moral economy in opposition to the idea of capitalism?
No, we don't really want to throw the baby out with the bathwater necessarily, but we do believe that unregulated capitalism is can truly exploit people, can be oppressive to people, and does not uphold the values of compassion and justice, which we feel as people of faith should be paramount.
How do you get around the idea, though, that if what you're advocating for is improved services or services that are paid for perhaps by people with more income or more means, that that idea of also having to live within your means, that you can't just increase and increase and increase spending?
Yes, social services are really only a part of what we're asking for, and we truly don't want to continue to expand our government so that everyone is receiving some kind of assistance from government. Our moral economy document, which folks can read on our website, actually specifically states that we would like to provide the opportunity for people to work and support their own families and contribute to their communities. So a lot of what we're asking for are actually investments in things that will bring businesses or grow businesses in Vermont, things like investing in our telecommunications and transportation infrastructure, spending money to try to make our housing more affordable, and investing in education and training for workers. And these are things that we've heard from business owners in our congregations that the state needs to do better.
You did have events around the state last year to try to look at this issue and to see what people were wanting. Is that what you were hearing from businesses and from people in faith communities?
That's right. Yes, that's what we've heard all across the state. And people have – this issue has very much resonated with people. We've had very good turnouts at 11 events in 9 different regions with over 400 people.
You know, we started by talking about the governor's budget, and it's not always a natural association to think of clergy and people of faith and the budgeting process. Why is this something that you in particular and this interfaith group is so passionate about?
It's true. Clergy are not economists. They don't pretend to be. We're not the number crunchers. But we are the members of society who are very close to people, and every one of the members of our clergy caucus serve congregations. They hear their stories. They see the suffering out there. They see people working hard, working 2 or 3 jobs, not being able to afford their housing, struggling to pay child care. And our hearts go out to those people, and we realize it really is through no fault of their own that they're not able to make ends meet. And so it must be some kind of structural problem, some systemic problem. And that is what Vermont Interfaith Action concentrates on, is effecting systemic change.
Do you think you're gaining any traction?
Yes, I do think we are. It's a slow process. Community organizing is not for the faint of heart or the impatient. But we got such a great reception all across the state. We've formed a good partnership with Public Assets Institute, which helps us to analyze the budget and fiscal policy. And we also have very good relationships with other nonprofits in throughout the state who are also analyzing different aspects of the budget and helping us to figure out what we need to advocate for.
Is this idea, the idea of a moral economy, an ideal, one of those ideals that you'll never actually reach? Or do you think we could actually see what your group is advocating for and what you see as a moral economy in this state?
I think it is something we could attain. I would point to the data from the mid-1960s. The war on poverty was actually working quite well, and there was very little difference between the growth of income, different income quintiles. And we actually do an exercise during our presentations that points that out. And we could return to that. Policies have gotten us where we are now, and policies can return us to what we had before.
The Reverend Debbie Ingram is Executive Director of Vermont Interfaith Action, which advocates for, as we've been talking about, a moral economy. Thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
This week, VPR's Report from Iowa has been exploring how caucus goers in that state are weighing which presidential candidate they're going to support, in particular in the Democratic race between former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. But as our reporters on the ground in Iowa learned, even the most faithful caucus goers need an entertaining escape from the campaign rhetoric. And for that, they can head to the Des Moines Performing Arts Center, where Caucus, the musical, opened last Saturday. Here's the show's creator and producer, Robert John Ford.
The idea first hit me back in the 80s when I was in college. There was a day when I was going to class and I ended up passing three different presidential candidates just out there desperate to shake my hand. And it's one of those moments where you thought, this is theatrical in its own way, and it's funny and it's absurd, and just this unique experience of being able to have a beer with the next president of the United States. Basically, for the first hour and a half of the show, you see all this chaos. You know, you see this perfect Iowa family being torn apart because of all the candidates and their campaign staff and the media that come in and try to influence them, and how it disrupts their lives so much. And it finally reaches that point in the show and in life as well that you just say, wait a second. They don't tell us who to vote for. They can't determine who we get to select. It's our choice. We can do whatever we want to. We have to make the informed decision. If you really want to get to the heart of the matter, you can have that direct access to that candidate. I came out here very intent on working for the campaign of a particular candidate. And when I met that candidate in person, immediately it turned off. It's like, nope, not going to be working for this person. And so that's what we in Iowa have access to that other people don't. We get to actually meet them face-to-face and have a conversation with them and see, look in their eyes and see, are they telling me the truth or are they giving me a line here? And you know, that's something unique that you don't get through the television screen of a, you know, a big convention or something like that. The show, it's targeted to Iowa audiences or those people that want to get a taste of what the caucuses are like in 2 hours, because they don't understand what we go through every 4 years. And I'm not saying that in a negative way. You know, it's a great honor, and we take it very seriously, and we love being involved in the process and being the first in the nation. But yet, it's just something that every other state cannot relate to. They don't understand that we are bombarded with ads for 6 months straight, and billboards, and people knocking on our doors and calling all hours of the day, randomly walking down the street and seeing a presidential candidate, and, you know, right here, having this much media in town, you know. A number of people came up and said, we absolutely needed this. This is just, we have to be able to take a moment just to break away from the reality of it and laugh at it. It's a very different tone to everything this year, so I think people appreciate the opportunity to sort of step away from what's mm-hmm. happening in the real race this year.
But if you don't slack, you may. Says, ho, 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 that's when you know it's time to go to Iowa. You'll spend Christmas,
Kwanzaa,
Hanukkah,
America with small-town folks who hold your destiny.
That was Robert John Ford, the creator and producer of Caucus, the musical, speaking with us on opening night last weekend. There were rumors flying that night that a connection to Democrat Martin O'Malley's campaign was trying to get O'Malley to attend a performance leading up to Monday's actual Iowa caucus. No word yet on that, if it's happened. Patty Daniels produced our story. That's it for today. Tomorrow, a new study suggests that toxins found in blue-green algae, the kind of algae that sometimes chokes Lake Champlain in the summertime, can trigger neurological symptoms like those seen in Alzheimer's or ALS. We'll talk about the research and the implications, and you can send any questions that you have to vermontedition@vpr.net. Then be sure to listen tomorrow at noon. Vermont Edition is produced by Rick Singeri and Sam Gail Rosen, with production assistance from Michelle Owens. Liam Connors directed the show, and our executive producer is Patty Daniels. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening and laughing. Thanks for all of it.